Monster Man, episode 303, Elf, comma, Aquatic to Garl. Hello and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm talking about the monsters that I find in them. Their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games. In today's episode, we're continuing our journey through Creature Catalog, the 1986 supplement for Basic Dungeons & Dragons. Before we do that, though, it's time to thank a new sponsor. Yes, this is someone who's gone to patreon.com/monsterman, and they've pledged as little as $1 a month to help support the show. And if, like today's backer, you pledge at the $2 or higher level, you'll also get access to my other show, Patron Deities, in which I take an in-depth look at the Deities and Demigods book and at using religion and mythology in your fantasy role-playing games. So thank you very much, Simone Canola. Your support means a lot to me. Our first monster for today is the Elf, comma, Aquatic. Now, you may be familiar with the Elf, comma, Aquatic from Season 1. They are elves, but, dig this, they live in the water. They have kelp fronds instead of trees of life, which I guess is kind of neat. Other than that, nothing to them. They're elves, but they're aquatic. One interesting tidbit. I've been finding a lot of interesting discussions about Creature Catalog on different forums, and a lot of them are by people who are really, like, steeped in basic D&D, and in particular the differences between D&D editions in ways that I'm not at all. So I don't recall where exactly I read this, but it was one of those other more observant gamers who noticed that this book says that aquatic elves are the enemies of Sahuagin. Well, here's the thing. There are no Sahuagin in basic D&D, or at least there are creatures that are very similar to them, but they don't have that name. Sahuagin only appear in advanced D&D. So this is a case where the description in Creature Catalog is basically just copied from the Monster Manual, or at least is being written by someone who has forgotten this distinction between the editions. I say editions, games. They are different games. And I think that this does speak to maybe the permeability of those boundaries that is very easy for people to forget, you know, which one you're thinking about, especially since so many of the concepts in the two games overlap significantly. So that's kind of the curious thing about the Elf, comma, Aquatic. Other than that, we've seen them before, so I'm not going to go into them. Next up, we have the Flitterling, and with this creature, we are back in familiar territory. Territory that we didn't get to explore as much in Monster Manual 2, I feel, and that is, of course, the Mischievous Woodland Sprite territory. Now, most Mischievous Woodland Sprites are not very big, but Flitterlings are minute. They are 1/4 of an inch tall. That's about 6 to 7 millimeters for my metric listeners. And you should probably think of the Flitterling not really as an individual creature, but it appears in a swarm, like a cloud of gnats. Dozens of Flitterlings all together will work together to take down an opponent. And indeed, kind of a neat ability here, which is that they can collectively sing songs that cast spells, right? So one Flitterling can sing a song, but it's just one tiny little Flitterling and it's not really powerful enough. But when you get 30 or so of them together, I think it's 30 to 50, whatever the number is, they can sing a song that either casts charm or fear. I think that's actually pretty neat. The idea of like this buzzing, humming cloud, and then like you start to realize that each individual mote within that cloud, you know, the size of a fly, is actually a little person, and that they're all singing together, and that that song together is powerful enough to be magical. That's sort of neat. They live in hollow trees, which must be like cities to them, or even inside hollowed out mushrooms. And if something happens to their homes, which they're bonded to, they can die. The areas around their homes also grow magic mushrooms, and these mushrooms have different magical effects. So if they befriend you, you know, if you help them out in some way, they can lead you to where the good mushrooms are. Actually, I like the little Flitterlings, and I don't generally like, you know, mischievous woodland sprites, but I like their powers, I like the description of their habitats. Yeah, I just think they're really good. They're one of the few little woodland fairy types that really feels different from the other ones. So, I mean, I think that that's kind of what stands out about them to me here. Finally, we have the Garl. Now, the Garl comes from a module called CM6, where chaos reigns. And my understanding, I haven't read or played that scenario, although from what I can gather about it, I probably should at least read it. CM6 was intended to introduce some of the features of the companion box set, right? So the different letters in front of the module code identify the box set that it was intended to be used with. And as a result, the events of CM6 are a bit grander in scope than most of the modules that begin with B or X. And there's like time travel, there's the fate of nations, there's sort of the history, the default setting. Again, this is also the time where Mystara as a setting is kind of being licked into shape, and my understanding is that like different modules make use of it to a greater or lesser extent. Now, in CM6, it doesn't seem like the Garls are particularly interesting. They basically function as goons that you're supposed to beat up. And I think that this is... we're going to see this next episode as well. Because Garls are basically up-muscled versions of existing opponents. Here it says that they are like primitive humans, but few humans are 10 feet tall. That'd be 3 meters for my metric listeners. And basically they seem more like kind of ogre-ish creatures. They're described as being incredibly crude and primitive. Like, they don't know how to use tools, they don't know how to make fire. So I think we're meant to think of them as kind of like an Australopithecus or something like that, you know, like some kind of early hominid that, you know, is similar to a human but not exactly the same as one. But they're comparatively intelligent and they can be taught to do these things. So I think, again, I haven't read it, but I believe that that module involves someone like basically arming the Garls, right? Like taking them and turning them into, you know, soldiers to go and attack people. Together with some of the monsters that we're going to talk about in the next episode, the Garl presents a challenge from a podcasting perspective. What I mean is that there's nothing to talk about with the Garl. It's a curious question as to where it fits in with the sort of the map of other humanoid species in Dungeons & Dragons, but there's a very simple answer to the question, which is that it doesn't. It doesn't do that. And that wasn't a goal for anyone. So the problem, essentially, is that the Garl fulfills a mechanical function, right? It fills a slot on the difficulty scale for a particular type of opponent. If you were at the level where ordinary Neanderthals were no longer a challenge to your player characters, but you still wanted some brutish, primitive caveman types for them to fight for whatever reason, for whatever scenario that you were writing, then the Garl can fulfill that function. And there's nothing wrong with that. It is convenient for the DM to not have to make this stuff up, to be able to look it up. It only really works if you have a sufficient familiarity with the backwaters of the monster books, but I mean, that's kind of my bit, I guess. So what I mean is that that is a function that is useful, but it's not really very exciting. I don't feel like I have anything to say about the Garl, because they're basically just big dumb caveman goons somewhere between, you know, a Neanderthal and an ogre. Now, I have been told that the idea of primitive humanoids, caveman types, is going to be something that recurs throughout this book, or at least throughout the Beckme books in general. So that's something I'm interested to find out about. So we'll keep our eyes open for more monsters like the Garl, but at present, I feel like it's perfectly fine. It fulfills a useful mechanical niche, but in terms of discussing it the way I discuss things on this podcast, there's not a lot to say. And yet I have said a lot anyhow, and that means that that's all the time that we have for today. In our next episode, we're going to be continuing our journey through the creature catalog, and we're going to talk about the Gator Man and the Hephaestion, right here on Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. Thank you for listening. If you have a favorite monster or something you'd like me to talk about, you can reach me on Twitter at GonzoHistory or by email, gonzohistory@gmail.com. To support Monster Man, just go to patreon.com/monsterman. Thank you to Ray Otis for designing the thumbnail image. Our introductory music is Solve the Damn Mystery by Jesse Spillane from the album Descent of the Goober Monster, used under a Creative Commons Attribution License. Thank you again for listening, and please join us next time.